Blog
I'm going to play a little
radio.
Music. Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com and the author of Prayer Prescriptions for Nurse Healers and the upcoming Prayer Prescription Trilogy. It is my pleasure to have Tammy Strobel on my show tonight of rowdykitten.com and the authority on small house living. And this is a very small house, 123 square feet, with solar heating and lofts and some little bit of storage. Anyway, the call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Tammy Strobel. Hello, Tammy.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you for coming. It's great. And congratulations on your book. The book is called You Can Buy Happiness, and it's cheap.
Oh,
thank you. One woman radically simplified her life. And this is the great Anne, and how you can do it too. Because it's not just you doing it. You know, it seems like you've probably gotten a lot of interest in what you're doing. And I know you probably have a story. I don't know if you want to tell us the long story or the short story about how this has all come to be for you.
Well, I can tell you the short-ish story. about 7 years ago, I was really stressed out, in debt, overweight, working at a job that wasn't a very good fit for me. And so my husband, Logan, suggested that we kind of pare down and basically simplify our lives. And I really wasn't on board with the idea at all. So it was really his idea to kind of get started on this downsizing process. And obviously I got on board and now we're living in a really tiny house on wheels and we're very happy. So life is good.
Well, this, I forgot it was on wheels. So this house can go anywhere that you decide to go. It's not like an RV or anything, but you could actually put it on a truck or whatever and move somewhere else and take it off the truck and live there for a while, it sounds like.
Right, and we actually just moved from Portland, Oregon, to a small ranching community in Northern California, and that was the beginning of September, so my mom came up with her big Ford F-350, and we hooked the house up to the truck and towed it down the road, and it was pretty cool. It's nice to be able to take your house with you.
So you actually live in Mount Shasta. I know I'm kind of going off track here, but Mount Shasta is one of my most I didn't let you answer. Are you living near Mount Shasta?
No, we're actually about 45 minutes north of Mount Shasta, and we're outside of Yreka, California, about 12 miles east of Yreka. So Yreka is really the closest big town, with air quotes.
I lived, worked in the Forest Service in Happy Camp, California. For
quite
some time. And Mount Shasta is by far, it's like one of those amazing power spots of the universe.
Oh, my gosh.
So you must be
amazed. We, in the valley where we're at, we have this stunning view of Mount Shasta. So I wake up every morning and get to see the mountain, and it's just so, so incredible. I feel really fortunate to be here.
Yeah. Well, I believe that the little people are protecting it from all kinds of things like volcanoes. I think the reason that the mountain has survived so beautifully is because of the little people. Have you ever seen any?
I haven't. I've heard rumors, though.
No, I've seen them.
Oh, really?
I personally have seen them. And they are little known. Where I saw them was at the base of Mount Shasta, and we were hiking, you know, and I wasn't stoned on marijuana. I wasn't having drunk. You know, I hadn't been drinking or doing anything for a long, long time. And at the base of the mountain are these amazing little gnomes that actually have the most incredible industrious attitude about it. They don't pay any attention, didn't pay any attention to me. And I didn't know about the little people of Mount Shasta. So anyway, we climbed the mountain. We were there for 3 or 4, you know, days. And I kind of forgot about them because it felt like a dream. And when we came back down, there they were again. And I then went into the bookstore of Mount Shasta. It's like a metaphysical bookstore. Mm-hmm. And there were books all over the place about the little people of Mount Shasta. So I felt very blessed to have seen them.
Oh, fascinating. Well, I'll have to read more about that. I've just heard stories from people, like, you know, kind of secondhand type tales. So it's interesting.
Yeah, well, just to let you know, it is true, and you are right there, so you have the opportunity to check it out. That's
cool.
Yeah, I didn't mean to go down that little track there, but let's get back to, I know downsizing is sort of like a word that's kind of overused, and maybe people get a little tired, or it's like tired of the word, but it is a hot topic nowadays. And what we were just, you and I were talking about before the show began, was that, you know, the baby boomers, and I'm one of them, and here we are, you know, we have all this stuff, and I think it causes this feeling of being so overwhelmed that I don't even know where to begin, and we want to move, and we want to move into a smaller place, so you're the perfect person at this moment to give us some advice about how we can get rid of this stuff.
Sure, well, you know, I would just say don't rush, you know, like something that really worked for Logan and I as we simplified is just kind of taking our time and going really like doing these little baby steps. So like in the beginning we were giving away between 10 to 30 things a week to charity or to friends and family who needed extra stuff. And then we got a little more bold and we decided to basically clean out our office and / guest bedroom, and we gave away all the stuff in that bedroom and then kind of just shut the door and pretended like we were living in a smaller space even though we weren't. And that really helped us see that we could in fact downsize and kind of really smart size our life in a lot of ways. So yeah, just kind of go slow and pare down over time. There's nothing wrong with taking that approach. I think sometimes going fast, it can be hard to get rid of stuff, and it can be really overwhelming. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the getting rid of things too fast kind of sets the stage for not going with it and flowing with the process because you've gone too fast, just like everything else in our society. People go so fast, and they don't even know what hit them half the time.
Right. And, you know, I think, too, it just really depends on your life circumstance and who you are as a person because Logan and I have friends who basically they had this huge two-bedroom apartment and they decided they wanted to bike across the country. And so they sold everything and that took about 3 months. And they've been bicycling ever since and kind of live really simple lives, and that really worked for them. But I know at least for me and a lot of my friends that were more into the slow approach.
Yeah, they did it fast, didn't they?
They did, yeah. It was impressive. Like, I couldn't imagine doing that myself. So, and it's cool that they've stuck with it, you know?
So it didn't bother them, and they didn't wish they had done it slower?
No, not at all. They kind of just got to this point where they were sick of all this stuff and they had this dream to really do more cycling and promote like cycle tourism and bike advocacy and kind of a totally different life that they were living in a lot of ways. And so just kind of getting it over with quickly just seemed to work for them, and I think that's great. So,
Well, have you ever heard of Peace Pilgrim?
Yes, I have.
I mean, there's somebody who didn't even have a house. She just had a little thing around, a little, fanny pack, basically, around her waist, and maybe a pencil and a little notebook, and she depended on the kindness of strangers, as it were, who, I mean, not even strangers. She believed that everybody she met was a soul, you know, entity or something. And that's an amazing, boy, talk about not having anything and just sort of taking the vow of poverty and just going straight ahead.
It's a pretty, that's an incredible story. And I don't think I could do that. I like my little house and the stuff that I do have. So,
well, you know, she believed in no war, and she was the peace pilgrim, and just a real model for what we all could be learning. We can learn from her so much. And
oh, sure.
She is no longer alive. She was hit by a car after many years of walking.
Oh, my gosh. But I didn't know that. How sad.
It was a while ago, you know. It wasn't like maybe 10 years or I don't think. I think it was longer than 10 years. Yeah, I mean, I think now you this little tiny house, there is like a lot of environmental aspects to it, isn't there?
There are, you know, but Logan and I really didn't start this process to, you know, kind of save the planet. It was really more about our own happiness and kind of getting out from under debt. And, you know, as time has gone by, we've become more educated about environmental issues. And so, you know, going so small and living so simply definitely has an extra benefit of being environmentally friendly, but it wasn't really a conscious thing when we started out on this path.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting out of debt, I know that reading your book, that was a main tremendous focus for you, for the both of you. How fast were you able to get out of debt?
We had about $30,000 in debt, and I'm always bad with numbers, but I think it was about 3 or 4 years that it took us to pay off our debt. And we were able to do that pretty quickly because we sold both of our cars. And we took all that money that we were putting towards car payments and insurance and gas, and we just put it all towards our student loan debt and the little credit card debt that we had. So, you know, getting that paid off was such a relief in so many ways for us.
I bet. I think cars are a tremendous burden in some ways. I mean, like just today, my car broke down and so did my husband's, and we were at opposite ends of very far away from each other, so neither of us could help the other. Yeah, it's like bizarre. I did make it home just in time for this radio show, though. I think that's pretty wild. But,
that is cool.
But I think the cars really hold people back. It's so you guys bought bicycles and you...
Right. We cycle everywhere, and you know, now we're living in a really rural area. Like I was saying, we're basically 13 miles from like a pretty big town, and so we're definitely getting our exercise, and it's been a ton of fun to do the cycling in a super rural area, but, you know, it's not for everyone. And cars are great tools, you know, they get us places, and, I'm definitely grateful for, you know, like I'm a member of Zipcar, and unfortunately it's not in the Yreka area, but kind of doing that car sharing, I think, is a great option, especially if you're, you know, in a rural area or even in a city, because, you know, sometimes you need a car. But I hopefully don't want to buy one ever again. They're just so expensive.
I know. So the car sharing idea, isn't there a group that has that where you can, it's like a community of people, isn't it, where you can borrow a car and they name their cars. Yeah.
There's Zipcar, there's Car to Go, which is based, I know they have a big contingent of cars in Portland. And then there's a bunch of other ones that are cropping up in larger cities. So it's definitely becoming really popular amongst younger folks.
Yeah, we were, we have a group here. I live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we formed this group called The Hive, a planet-loving activity. And one of the, we came up with all of these ideas of how to minimize our carbon footprint. And nobody really brought up the tiny house idea, but I think that is something we'll bring up, I will bring up at the next meeting. But one thing that was brought up was how people can lend people the tools that they might need to do something, and people can help each other in do the tasks that need to be done, and then you can help them, and there's all, it becomes more of a community of people helping each other, of trying to figure out people's needs and and helping out, and that you don't have to buy all these tools because somebody else might have them, and then you know, just accumulating all this stuff, it happens pretty quickly. And
yeah, it's really neat. And I know, like in Portland, there's a lot of tool sharing libraries, and I just think that's super awesome for, you know, a lot of reasons. Like you said, you don't have to buy it yourself necessarily, but it also really promotes community engagement, and you get to know your neighbors a little bit more, all of which are really good for your happiness.
Yeah. Do you have a small house community where you live right now?
Not where we are currently, but, you know, everyone in this area has been really supportive of what we're doing, and, you know, it's, that's really cool because, like, you know, not everyone wants to live in a super tiny house, and that's totally okay. I'm all about, like, looking at options and kind of figuring out what works for your own life and your needs, and I think that's a big part of simplifying. But while we were in Portland, there's a pretty big tiny house community in that area. Just there aren't, like, there isn't a pod of homes, like, grouped together, but there are lots of little homes, like, parked in backyards and things like that. So it's a nice little network of community there.
I can see doing the tiny house thing, moving it on our property somewhere, and then continue to working on downsizing what we have. It seems like that would be a really great way to go about it.
That would be neat.
And then it would be great to, because you're taking a few steps away from it, and you're not in the midst of all this stuff. Now, I know a lot of people have problems, and as I do, with books. And we have too many books, even before I realized I had too many. And they can become quite a burden, and a lot of people, the whole Kindle revolution answers that problem to a certain extent. But most people I know say, well, I, even if they have a Kindle, they'll say, well, I just like the smell of a book. And I don't know what the answer is there.
Well, you know, that's a, it's hard. The book issue was something that I struggled with personally. I mean, I had probably at one time over 500 books. And so I've given 99% of those books away, and now I don't read, I don't have a Kindle, so I'm kind of one of these old school people who really likes just having a book in my hand. So, you know, I buy books all the time, but when I'm done with them, I usually give it away to the library or to a friend or family member who wants to read it. Just because for my, like, usage pattern, I noticed that I never really reread books. Like, so the ones that I have now are, you know, I'm keeping for certain writing projects, for
right,
and things like that. And it's just worked out a lot better for me personally, and I don't have to lug them around everywhere either, which is nice.
Well, where do you keep them in your tiny house?
We have a nice little shelf that's right above our window nook, and we have our little library there, and then there's another row of books because we have like it's like a pantry type shelving unit, and so we have some books up there too. But we don't have many. I'd say between Logan and I, we have about 30 books on hand, they're ones that we refer to frequently.
Yes. Well, can you tell me which ones you like?
One of my favorite books right now, I'm actually reading it for a second time. It's called Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And it's all about, she's a vulnerability and shame researcher. And so I just find her research really fascinating. And I love a book called This I Know by Susanna Conway. And that's all about kind of creativity and healing from loss. And I think it's a really powerful book. So those are two of my top favorites right now that are still on my shelf.
That's great. And you refer to them. And that is true that there is something amazing about holding a book and the smell of them and that kind of thing.
And I spend so much time on my computer writing and, you know, doing email and all the things that I do for my job. And so it's nice to just read a book at night and not be plugged in and staring at a screen.
Yes. I noticed that in your book you talk about unplugging from, getting off the grid. Do you schedule times like that all throughout the week, or do you get off the grid entirely one day a week, or how do you work that?
Yeah, so currently, basically, I try and unplug every night. So, like, no email, no internet surfing. I just like to hang out with Logan, and I like to read and cook a good dinner and try and stay off the screens completely. And then I do my best to unplug every Sunday as well, so no screen time. But, you know, sometimes I log on if I know, like, my mom's going to send me a note or something. But it's really refreshing to not be on the computer all the time, because I have a tendency to, like, want to check my email, you know, like, what's going on, you know, like, oh, maybe somebody sent me something. But for me, it's really a good thing it's like a good way to set boundaries, I guess, is what I'm trying to say for me personally.
Yes. How did you hook up with New World Library? That must be quite the story.
Yeah, so I feel so fortunate that they published my book. They're just an awesome group of people. But so in August of 2010, just kind of a normal day, I woke up and drank some coffee, checked my email, and I noticed that I had a note from a New York Times reporter, and she wanted to interview me about living simply and happiness. And I was kind of hesitant to say yes to the interview because I felt kind of intimidated, like, oh, God, what do I have to say to a New York Times reporter, you know? It can't be that interesting, but I did say yes to her interview request. And to make a long story short, we appeared in this piece in the Times, and the story went viral online. And so as a result of that, we were on a lot of different TV shows, and then I was pitched by probably a dozen literary agents to sign on and, you know, to do a book. And so I signed with an agent, and I wrote my proposal, and he pitched it, and I ended up signing with New World Library. So pretty incredible.
It's a lovely story. I love it. Yes, it is. But you have another book, too, that was self-published, right?
Right. It's called Smalltopia, and it's all about kind of working for yourself. And it's more of like a how-to, like, guidebook kind of based format, whereas my current print book is more narrative-driven and research-based. And I still have how-to in there, but Smalltopia, I think, is a good starting point. But as I look back on my work, I'm like, oh, I could have done this better or that better. But I think
it's
the nature of writing, too. So.
It is. Well, I mean, this latest book, You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, et cetera, has a lot of wonderful stories in it that I think people love stories. They are drawn to them. They can learn from them. And you also talk about your interviews that you've done with people who have done similar things mm-hmm. to yourself. And you mentioned before the program that your mother is downsizing. What is her experience with downsizing? She's probably learned a lot from you, I would think.
Yeah, she has learned a lot of little tips over the years from Logan and I. And she lives in a 2,000-square-foot house, and over the last couple years, she's worked really hard to get rid of the clutter. And my dad recently passed away in June, and so now...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. She's, mm-hmm. you know, sorting through all his stuff, and it's been a challenge, but she's also had a lot of help from her brother who lives in town, and so that's been good. But it's, you know, it's just been a long process for her, and she's probably got at least 2 more years to go of, like, clearing out clutter and sorting through, you know, the good stuff that's in the garage versus garbage. And it just accumulates so quickly. And she's like, I didn't know I had so much stuff. But
yeah.
So she's just going slow and not trying to stress about it, which I think is good.
Yeah, I think it needs to be done over a period of time. And, you know, so many people... I was just talking to a friend of mine who had to move from a rather large farmhouse and a large barn, and she had a bunch of animals. And I remember she had only 30 days when it came right down to it to get out. And for a period of time, she didn't even have a house. Somebody had bought her house.
Wow.
She needed to buy a house. And she said to me just the other day that she wishes that she could have done it over a longer period of time, because it just seemed to be a slam
mm-hmm.
to her life. It just wasn't the way she really wished. If she had it to do again, it would have been a longer period.
Yeah, and I definitely think there's a lot of value to that, and I know my mom feels lucky that she can have the time to sort through all these things versus being forced to do it really quickly. And, you know, I always tell people there's a really big difference between kind of voluntarily downsizing and, you know, being forced to do it, because those are two really different circumstances. And so it's definitely nice to have that time.
Well, does your mom plan to move into a tiny house?
No, she's not. She's not really a tiny house person, which is fine. But for now, she's, I think she's going to stay where she is. But she has been talking about, you know, maybe moving into like a 1,000-square-foot house in maybe 5 years. But she's kind of, you know, it's still so new since my dad passed away, and she just wants, she doesn't want to make rash decisions, but she also knows that she's got a lot of stuff that needs to be sorted through.
Well, when you have such a major loss like that, you need to not make any grand decisions,
mm-hmm.
at least for a year, really. And I agree with that guideline, because you are grieving and you need the time, and you all are, your whole family is, and you need to take that time. It's feel the sadness and feel the joy. Does she live near you, or?
She does. She lives in Red Bluff, and that's about 2.5 hours from where Logan and I live. So
mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to be closer to her, because, you know, Portland was a 10-hour drive.
That's really far. That's really
yeah.
far.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I can hop on the bus and zip down there pretty easily. So, you know, she's happy to have me back in California, and I'm happy to be back, too.
Well, you know how it is in California. You say 2.5 hours, and that seems like a long time, but it takes long-distance travel. It takes a long time to get anywhere.
True.
But it is a great way to expand your consciousness, to see those wide-open spaces and the beautiful wide-open sky and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely something healing in that, just being out in nature and taking a big breath and letting it all out.
That's right. Well, you know, what you're doing is also very apropos to this time, even though you said you didn't start out with the whole idea of saving the planet, as it were. But at this time, you know, we had a really major storm in this part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
it didn't hit us per se, but it wasn't very far away in New York, New Jersey, where it was a terrible devastation, and people are still dying because they can't, they're like in the 12th floor, they can't get down, older people. Anyway, and there's another major storm heading tomorrow, and it's a northeaster. It's people are worried about it. It's hitting the exact same areas that were hit last week. And, you know, it's, and then, of course, there was an earthquake in Vancouver, and then there was a tsunami in Hawaii, and right after that we had the storm, and it's almost all this, these things are related. So when we started our hive of planetary, planet-loving activity, and it was a direct response to the 350.org, Bill McKibben, and his he's just, you know, just wonderful.
He's amazing. He's such a good writer.
Yeah, he is. And he said, we saw him recently, and he said, well, I just would have preferred to stay in my little writing room and just write, but I can't. I have to get out into the world and tell people, you know, that he wrote that wonderful article in Rolling Stone about the ice melt, and that was what got people to know that this latest storm happened. There's like three or four things that happened all together, the warming of the water, and the full moon, and all this stuff, dramatic weather changes. So what you're doing is why I think people are so interested is because we are, as my friend Kevin Miller says, we are suffering from eco-anxiety. It's a low-lying anxiety where you can't, you may not even know that you, why you're feeling this anxiety. But, and then it makes it even worse if you're surrounded by clutter. So I think that eco-anxiety, and then it's not even that low-lying because we're talking about major storms and people dying, and just, I had to go out in the middle of the storm, even though we didn't want to hit that badly, but it was very, 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 very loud. And I go to people's homes who are birthing, and it was a really amazing experience. We have the Amish here, the Amish community, and that's another story. I mean, we're talking about people who don't have electricity, who do live very, very simply, who don't have automobiles. And I was just speaking with an Amish woman today who said, well, we are really, really fortunate because, okay, a storm is coming tomorrow, and I don't even have to worry about it. Our families don't have to worry about it because we just live very, very simply. And they're totally off the grid. And I know that that seems dramatic in some ways, but in other ways we can learn from them. They have such great things to teach us.
Yeah, and even if it's just, you know, you don't have to go off the grid, but, you know, having some extra food and water in your house, for example, or a first aid kit, like all that can come in handy if there's a natural disaster, you know, and I don't know that a lot of folks are really prepared. And that's something that Logan has really been big on, is just making sure, you know, we have like a week's worth of food and water handy in case something does happen, which, you know, is smart. For a while, I thought it was a little nutty, but that was kind of in my old Tammy days. So,
it is smart, and given what is going on now in this dramatic weather, climate kind of stuff, climate change, it is very, very, he's actually very foresighted to have gathered together. I guess you couldn't take all that food with you, though.
Yeah, we had to downsize the food storage stuff, but we still have quite a bit. Like, we have it stored in our tiny house, and then we have food stored in these kind of plastic containers that slip under our house, under the trailer, which is really handy.
Yes, it is. So you say you have a lot of windows in your house. Is that part of the solar heating, the solar power?
Or we don't have solar power. We're plugged into the grid with the tiny house. We've thought about doing the solar power, but it's just so expensive. And since we're plugged into the grid, our power bill is between $5 to $10 a month. And so Right now, it just doesn't make sense for us to do solar.
Right.
But we have the house really well insulated with, it's actually with wool insulation from Willamette Valley sheep out of the Portland area. And we've got lots of windows in the house, and we just have a little freestanding heater that keeps us super toasty when it's cold.
That's all you would need. That's all you would need. And I forgot about the wool. What was the word there? You are
insulation.
Insulation. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Tell us more about the wool insulation. I don't think that's something I knew anything about.
Well, it's basically, it's just basic wool that's been treated, and you stuff it into the walls and the flooring, and it actually expands. And so it's pretty awesome stuff, and it's not toxic.
No.
So it was a little more expensive than the regular insulation or standard stuff that's used, but our friend Katie built the house, and so we didn't really want to expose her to those kind of toxic chemicals, and she appreciated that. So it was worth the extra money for us.
I guess if you were raising sheep, you could use the wool for insulation.
Possibly. I'm not really educated on how that would work, but
I don't know the answer to that. It just seems like I don't know what kind of things you have to do to them. I mean, after you've sheared the sheep, there's probably a huge amount of different things you have to do to make it, make it right for the insulation.
Yeah. There's a process to it, but it's not toxic at all, and that's kind of what we were aiming for.
Yes. That's very, very good. So, and what is your, you've done a lot of interviews with people who are doing what you're doing similarly, but what stands out as your favorite interview or favorite few interviews with the people? What are other people doing that are fascinated by?
Yeah, there's so many people out there doing awesome stuff. I have a couple people in mind who are in the book. Andrew Odom, he lives in the South. He's building his own tiny house, and he's married, and he has a little girl who's, I think, 1.5 now. And they've just made huge life changes, paid off all their debt and are going super small. And he's got a great blog called Tinier Revolution, so definitely check that out. And then my friend Dusty Arab, she's in the book as well, and she has two little ones, and she and her partner and the kids live in, I think it's a 400-square-foot apartment outside of Portland, and when I was interviewing her for the book, she said that, going so small with kids has been just so beneficial for their family because she has more time to really be a mom, and she doesn't have to worry about, paying for a big mortgage. She has fairly cheap rent, and, she still works a lot, but she has more time to really devote to her kids, which was a big part of her impetus to downsize.
And staying away from if you have a family, especially, you just want to hang out with them and play board games and paint and, do artistic things. And, so I think technology is something that it has to be balanced, really, in our lives. And especially with children. I mean, you don't want them to get too far out there with the technology because they lose their childhoods that way.
Sure. Yeah, it's. I know Dusty has some pretty good boundaries with her kids and the technology stuff. I mean, there's a lot of good that can come from, technology and teaching kids how to use it. But even, like adults, there's only so much screen time you really need every day. So she tries to balance that with her kids and seems to be doing a great job. So, there's so many people out there just doing really neat things, and it was a lot of fun interviewing them for my book.
So you were interviewing people for your book, and you don't have a radio show or anything like that?
No, these are just folks that, you know, I've met over the years, and I have a pretty broad friend network, and so when I started brainstorming, like, topic ideas for my book, I wrote down tons and tons of names of folks who were simplifying and who I thought might be a good fit for the book, and then I sent out a ton of emails, and, you know, some people didn't want to be in the book because they don't, you know, it's a little too public for them, and that's fine, but so kind of culling through that list and picking and choosing was hard.
Did you have to transcribe? Did you tape it and transcribe it, or you just wrote the stuff down?
A little bit of both. I have a post on my website, and I talk about one of my superpowers being able to write really fast and type notes almost verbatim. I did a lot of qualitative and quantitative research for years, and so part of that was doing tons of interviews for studies, and so that background really helped me as I was interviewing for this book, and so it was fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And do you have other books that you are thinking about writing?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a new book idea right now, and I'm still trying to sort it out, but roughly I'm thinking it's going to be about love, loss, and happiness, and kind of touching on the story of me losing my dad this year and how I, at least in my experience, I've found that there can be a lot of happiness and joy that can be found even in the midst of suffering, and so I kind of want to explore that idea in more depth, but I still have a lot of work to do on my book proposal.
Yeah. Were you with your father when he died?
I was, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that is a precious gift.
It was. It was very, I was very fortunate this year. I spent a lot of time traveling to and from Portland to California, helping my mom take care of my dad as he, you know, got more and more sick. And it was very serendipitous that I happened to be there when he passed. And, you know, it was one of the hardest things I've had to do, like holding his hand as he died. But I'm glad that I was able to be there and, you know, not only for him, but for my mom, and to just tell him that it's okay to let go and, you know, be around to take care of my mom, and we've got each other. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting year filled with lots of happiness and sadness.
Yeah, I was with my mother when she died, and it isn't terribly sad. I found it to be sad, don't get me wrong, but there was a tremendous amount of joy in watching. Well, I can't explain it, I've written about it too, and it has to do with, it was this unconditional love seemed to fly from her. She was rising out of her body, you know, the soul, this amazing spirit rose and filled the room with light. My brother was there, my husband was there, we all felt it. Mm-hmm. And there was this amazing unconditional love that suddenly, I experienced it for about 3 or 4 days, where nothing anybody did was something I needed to judge or feel critical about, but it was more than that. It was this great feeling of love towards everybody, but also in that amazing feeling was, suddenly I would just cry and weep. It was such an amazing revelation in one way, but also very deeply sorrowful in another, and you know, you just never get over something like that. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, what a gift. What a gift, really.
Well, it's a beautiful story about your mom, and I definitely feel really thankful that I was able to be there with my dad as he passed. So,
Yeah, I mean, we feel them. We have dreams about them. We know that they're working for us in the other dimension.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always apparent. Well, of course, in a lot of ways, that once we slow down our own lives, we can feel it better. But it's a matter of appreciating that they are always with us.
Sure, definitely.
It's a matter of remembering.
Yeah, and just, you know, kind of, you know, I know my dad's still around and floating around out there. It's all kind of energy and,
I
know, it's been an interesting year for me and my family and, but yeah, it's been great.
Yes, it is. It's hard. I was talking to somebody about losing parents today. You just don't think that they're ever going to pass or die or whatever, but it's because they don't. You don't think they're ever going to die, but that's because they don't ever die. So, it does change. Things change.
Right.
That's one thing we can certainly count on.
This is true. Everything changes.
So when you moved to where you're moving or have moved, did you know people there, or did you just kind of come down to the Mount Shasta area without, just making inroads to new relationships?
Well, my in-laws, they actually were living on their cattle ranch, so we're next-door neighbors with my father-in-law and my mother-in-law. And it's really amazing, and my Logan, my husband's grandparents are right up the road, and so is his uncle, and so it's been really awesome being so close to family, and we definitely are glad to be back home, and we're just kind of seeing how things go, and so far it seems like everyone likes having us here, so that's a good thing.
Oh, I don't know. I think that is wonderful.
So it's pretty special, I think, and we feel really fortunate.
Well, congratulations for making that decision, because we need to tune into these things that are so important and not and not ignore them or not do it, not to go do what you've just done because you're thinking maybe it's not going to work out or maybe they don't like me or whatever. But we have to work through these family issues, and it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's always that fear. Like, everyone experiences that. And Logan it's my family too. He's just, we're so fortunate. Like, we have a great family support system, and part of the reason we moved back was to be closer to everyone, and I'm closer to my mom now too, which it makes a really big difference for our day-to-day happiness, and it feels like we're on the right track, which I think listening to your gut is positive, and I think a lot of us ignore those kind of instinctual feelings.
Yeah, you wake up in the morning and you think, I'm on my right path.
Mm-hmm.
My destiny is shining before me. That's great. So your next book is sort of gelling, it sounds like. You're not quite...
Yeah,
it's formulating. It's percolating. That's the word.
It is. It's definitely percolating, and I've been doing a lot of writing on the topic of loss and happiness, and for me, like, my creative process tends to be pretty convoluted, so sometimes it takes me a while to iron out ideas, but I don't think that's a bad thing. Sometimes taking your time can be really beneficial. and, you know, I want to make sure the book is helpful for readers. I don't want to just put something out there because I feel like, oh, I need to write another book. I feel really strongly that it's got to benefit the reader in a lot of ways. Otherwise, it's just not very valuable.
Right. Well, and also has to be valuable to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, if it's valuable to you, it will be valuable to others.
I hope so. That's the goal.
That's the goal. That's right. So have you met the people at New World Library, like Shakti Gawain and Mark Allen and about others? Yeah.
I was really fortunate in that I got to visit New World Library when I was down in, after an event in Sebastopol a few months ago, and so I had a, they gave me a tour of their office, and I met my editor and some other folks there that I've been working closely with, but I didn't get to meet the whole staff, and I haven't met any other authors in person, at least that are with New World. So, yeah, but they're a great group of people and have been super helpful throughout the writing process, and the editors there are great too. So I'm pretty happy with the experience.
I know. It's wonderful. I had met Kim Skipper Corbin. She was on my radio show.
Oh, cool.
And she's, I was making comments on the New World Library page and just, you know, hanging out and making comments for a period of time. And I don't know how it came up that I do this radio show, but she tuned into it and send people like you my way. And she herself came on, I think, the beginning of this year, and she was just delightful. They're just a really, you can just feel that they're great people. And Mark Allen, with his idea of being lazy, is one of the greatest philosophies I've ever heard of.
That's cool, yeah. I like that philosophy as well. There's a lot to be said for just lounging about once in a while.
Yeah, it sounds like he believes in it all the time. And I think, I'm sure, though, he certainly has accomplished quite a bit in his life.
Mm-hmm.
But he has, I guess, that he's done it in such a way that he would call it lazy, just relaxed and happy. So
yeah,
I don't think those things are lazy, but he was on my radio show too, and we were talking about this concept of people really shy away from that word, but in reality, it's all in the way you define it. He has a whole way of the reason he's accomplished so much is with creating a vision that he, not necessarily, I guess you could call it a vision board, but just creating a vision where you think about it in a lying down position. I really like him. I think he's great.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, people rush so much, and I've been in that space before, and I don't think it does much for our creative process.
At least
not for me. I mean, I kind of need afternoons where I'm just out walking or riding my bike or maybe sitting on my front porch to just kind of think about ideas, and that's really helpful when you're working on really big projects like a book, where you just have that time to kind of let things percolate, and in the end it seems like projects turn out better if you can create that space in your life to just kind of, you know, be lazy a little bit. It's okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's a beautiful thing. And, it sounds like you've hooked up with a great group of people there. I'm glad that that's working out for you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled. I feel very, very lucky. I don't have any complaints at this point in my life.
Right. I mean, you probably, it sounded like you had a pretty high-powered job or several of them, and you've really, slowed things down. You're a full-time writer. You're living the life of your dreams. That's just perfect. That's wonderful, and we can all learn from you.
Well, yeah, thank you for the kind words, and it's definitely, I'm glad I've given up kind of the power jobs because they didn't really contribute to my well-being, and now I make less money, but I'm happier, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. And, just having that time to focus on relationships is so important.
Yeah, and you do have, speaking of Rowdy Kitten, is it Kittens or Kitten?
Yeah, Rowdy Kittens, so K-I-T.
Do you have a bunch of cats around, or how does that work?
Well, I have two cats, And it's funny because the name of the blog was just kind of a pairing of words, and it kind of started as sort of like a little joke, and the name stuck, and it makes me laugh, so I think that's a good thing, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, you have a Facebook page, a Rowdy Kittens Facebook page, and you have actually that's where you do your blogging, is on rowdykittens.com. Is it
right.
With an S? With
yeah.
An S?
Right, so it's just Rowdy, R-O-W-D-Y, and then KITTENS.com.
And you are also a photographer.
I am,
so
yeah.
And you do a lot of pictures for your blog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love taking photos. It's, for me, a really meditative process, and just kind of I'm really into taking photos of everyday life and kind of documenting that. It's a lot of fun for me, and I'm going to be teaching an e-course on photography in the new year, and I'm really excited about that project, so it should be fun.
Tell us about your class.
Sure. So it's a four-week course, and it's not like super highly technical. I'm going to be offering a lot of tips and tools that'll help people improve their photos, but in a lot of ways, it's really aimed at getting people to see their world and how magical their everyday life is, because I think sometimes we miss that in the day-to-day rush and going to work and coming home, and, you know, like slowing down a little bit and taking pictures can be really powerful.
Yes, it's true. When last week when the river was rising, I was taking pictures of it at its various stages. Well, I live on the river, on the Conestoga River. So during the, there was this amazing, the river looked like it was churning.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like, it wasn't even going in a direction, it wasn't going in the direction that you would normally think it should be going. It was just
mm-hmm.
Like a cauldron. And so I captured a little bit of that on and just to take pictures like that really immediately slows you down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And kind of noticing all the subtle things in nature and patterns and texture, it's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. It is. And that's great. So people can go to rowdykittens.com and take your class if they so desire.
Yeah, registration will open up mid-December, so we'll start on January 7th, and I teach other e-courses as well, one on writing that'll be opening up in February, so I really enjoy doing the e-courses. It's just fun to connect with people and to, you know, be helpful and share some of my knowledge with others and just to connect. Fun.
Yeah, thank you for everything that you've done and everything you're doing, and it is certainly wonderful to have talks with you the last hour, and it's a wonderful pleasure. We've come to the end of the hour, for heaven's sake.
Oh, it's already, I'm like, oh, it went so fast, but oh gosh, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure talking with you.
I really enjoyed it, and I wish you all the best, and I will keep in touch with you, just, you know what I mean, just with all the stuff you're doing. And I will read your blog faithfully and all that kind of great stuff. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'm going to be playing music for Mother and Child by Klaus C. Jensen. And here
awesome.
It comes.
Bye-bye.